WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives. One moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Chris Spurgeon. Terry Gross is out today, but we'll be hearing an interview she recorded last week. Alan and Susan Raymond are the kind of documentary filmmakers who spend months with the subjects of their films, cameras rolling the whole time. 20 years ago, they lived with the Loud family for 7 months to make the PBS documentary series An American Family. During the series, Mrs. Loud asked for a divorce, and their son Lance announced he was gay. More recently, the Raymonds have made films on police in the nation's highest crime precinct, the South Bronx. They profiled the Lewisburg Federal Penitentiary, and they made a study of three families with schizophrenic children. Their new film, I'm a Promise, is the story of the Stanton School, an elementary school in North Philadelphia where 90% of the students live below the poverty line and 95% come from single-parent homes. Later in the program, we'll hear from Alan and Susan Raymond, but first Terry speaks with Deanna Burney, who was the principal of the Stanton School for 3 years. She quit during the filming of the documentary. Burney has worked in the Philadelphia School District for 24 years and is now the principal of a middle school. I'm a Promise will debut on HBO on Monday. Terry Gross asked Deanna Burney why she decided to let the Raymonds film at her school, knowing they would show the bad with the good.
Well, most times, anything that's been done in the educational field has been outside of the school, or it's been like a controlled interview. And here we were going to have a documentary made where people were actually going to see us walk the walk. There's lots of people that talk the talk, but that's separate, and I felt that that was a good opportunity for us to really showcase the talents and gifts of our children and of our teachers and of our staff and of our families and of our community.
Were there any times you asked them to shut off the camera because you wanted a private moment with somebody?
I did try to get some private moments. I remember that graduation scene when I was crying. I didn't ask them to shut off the camera because I really didn't want to direct or be involved in what they saw. I can't get outside myself and see myself as a human being, and I felt, you know, through this I would be able to see myself.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I think sometimes we think we know how we're coming off, mm-hmm. or we think we know what we're saying, and sometimes we don't, because you can't get outside yourself and observe yourself in action.
One of the things that's clear you tried to do at the school was to build the self-esteem of your students. And you'd have them recite, I'm talented, intelligent, and gifted. Does that help, do you think, reciting things like that?
Well, I didn't have them recite it. If I asked them what kinds of students they were, you know, they responded that way. I also had a little boy that, if you asked him his name, he would say Mr. Potentiality, because one day the gospel choir was practicing, and I put my arms around him and said, Johnny, what is it that makes Miss Burney love you so much? And he said, because I'm a whole bunch of potentiality. And we called him Mr. Potentiality. There was another little boy that we called Mr. President, and when he was in first grade, we'd ask him where he'd live when he was grown, and he'd say, the White House. What are you going to have a lot of? Money? Who are you going to give it to? Miss Burney, what you going to do with it? Give it to the kids. I think that it's important that children hear those words, you know, that they're not words for a select group of children. And I don't think that the words are enough. It's the whole belief and the practices that go behind it. It's all of the other things that go with it.
It's clear in the movie that when you had a kid who was acting up and sent to your office, you would try, on the one hand, to show how much you cared about that child, and on the other hand, to show them that their behavior, on the other hand, was really unacceptable. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about how you show those two things at the same time, your love for the child, but your disapproval of what they just did?
Mm-hmm. I think that all of us make mistakes in life, and children make mistakes just as well as I do. And I think that it's important that you put a reflective process in, that the child realizes that they made a mistake and what could they have done in the future, and at the same time set the expectations that you know that they can achieve, because lots of times I think our expectations are too low for our children. Our children want to learn, they want to do well, they want to succeed.
There's a couple of parents meetings between you and one of the parents in the movie, and in one of the meetings, a child who you're obviously really close to has been acting up, and you say, listen, you know, if you don't leave my office now, I'm going to have to call on your mother. Finally, the mother comes in, and you sit down with the mother, and I think you're hoping that the mother is going to say something to her son like, this behavior is unacceptable. You must do what the principal says. You must do what the teacher says. And instead, the parent acts very inappropriately. I'm going to play a clip from the film.
Jakina, I know that you're upset, okay? And I don't want you to be upset this way. But what I want you to do is tell him that you and I are together on this, and he's supposed to listen, he's supposed to do his work, and that if he doesn't, we can walk him home and you'll be there waiting for him.
You're going to make me hurt you. I'm not telling him nothing because I went through this last year with you. Matter of fact, you're going home. I'm going to show you. I'm not going to tell you anything. Let's go. And I'm going to punch you in your face, okay? Because I told you I'm not going through this year up here.
You can't.
Go get your jacket now. You want to show up? Fool, can you get up? I'm tired of you with that dumb stuff. Go get your.
What was your reaction when the mother threatened to hit the kid instead of, verbally telling them that they've got to behave better?
Ask the mother not to hit the child, but accept the fact that the mother's really angry at the child and that the child has disappointed her. But at the same time, help her deal with that in other ways other than hitting the child.
How did you feel about that meeting with the mother being on camera?
Cornelius's mother, Jakina, is very special to me. She was all of 24 years old. She had three children, and I saw her and watched her on a day-to-day basis nurture her own mother, who was very sick and eventually died. It didn't bother me being on camera with Jakina.
Now, recently on this program, we had on Madeline Cartwright, mm-hmm. who was the principal of a school very close to the school
yes.
where you were a principal. And she was talking about how the way she made her school work, she brought in a washing machine and dryer. So if the parents didn't have time to wash the kids' clothes, someone at the school could take care of it, and the kids would know that they'd always be clean. She would sometimes bring children home with her and take care of them at her home for a night. She would organize the parents to clean the school. Did you end up doing things like that, too, in your school? Has that become part of what a principal needs to do nowadays?
Well, I think schools have been asked to address a lot of the social needs of the families because it's the one place that still exists in the neighborhood. It's the first, it's a safe refuge, it's the closest refuge. I think in lots of ways that's unfortunate because I feel as a principal accountable for performance and results, and we exist to teach children, and they're capable. And right now we have a lot of children in our schools who are underachievers, not low achievers. They're children who have learned how to be helpless because they haven't gotten the instruction that they need. And that was something that I always had to try to balance and deal with in my day-to-day life.
So tell me about some of the things that you did that wouldn't really be in your job description as principal.
Well, first of all, probably the hours of the day, getting there and opening up the school in the morning. I had a coal heat at school. And during the course of the 3 years that I was there, there's two people who were building engineers. They're the heads of the custodial team, and they're no longer employed by the school district because there were problems. The problems that you deal with day to day are things like dealing with maintenance. The 1201 people do not come under the administration of the principal.
Is it a union you're talking about?
Yeah. So it's really a challenge to keep your building clean
and
immaculate and heated for the children and for the teachers. There's no doubt in anybody's mind that schools exist for kids. But if you don't create the same conditions for the adults who serve the kids, you have a problem.
Did you end up doing cleaning yourself?
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. What kind of cleaning would you do?
In the 3 years that I was there, I think there might have been 3 Saturdays and 4 Sundays that I wasn't in the building. And the community helped. They would send me breakfast on Sunday mornings. They would ask me how I wanted my eggs. One day a weekend, either a Saturday or a Sunday, I did cleaning. And I had a wonderful assistant to the building engineer, Theodora Guignard, and she used to help me put up bulletin boards. I spent every New Year's Day in that school with my family and with some people from the community who came because we would try to do the bulletin boards over again and make things really beautiful for the staff and the children. And we paint it inside, we paint it outside. We did whatever it took. Our bathrooms had wall-to-wall mirrors in them. Lots of people ask, how can you tell if a school's a good school? I always say, visit the children's bathrooms. It undergirds everything that happens in the school. It shows how the adults respect the children and how the children respect the school. And our bathrooms were painted with the wall-to-wall mirrors, and there was always lots of things that you need, toilet paper, soap, paper towels, things like that.
Is it appropriate that principals should have to take on this kind of burden of cleaning and worrying about the heating system and redesigning the bathrooms. And I mean, it's just dealing with your basic administrative problems and discipline problems and knowing who the students are and being encouraging to them. That's mm-hmm. more than a full-time job right there.
Well, that's really what made me leave after the end of the third year, because I questioned myself all along about this. But there's a more important issue, and that is by doing these things, I, as the educational leader of the school, wasn't really able to hone the instructional program and to make sure that children were learning, that they weren't underachievers.
But this is the dilemma, isn't it? Because if you don't take care of a school that looks decent, where the building has some dignity so the children can have some self-respect when they're in the building and they can be comfortable, and there's an atmosphere of respect in the school and safety in the school. If you don't have that, it's just pointless to try the lesson plans anyways, right?
You need that, but by only doing that, you reinforce society's bedrock belief that minority kids can't succeed mm-hmm. or that they're born with inferior intelligence. And I think that the time has come when people need to speak up about what they need to have a school that produces children that achieve, because the children are capable and the parents are supportive. And it's up to us to start to articulate what it is that needs to happen.
So you felt that you there just wasn't time to do both, to have a school that was physically tolerable and also to have a school where the curriculum was carefully designed.
Well, I asked for an assistant, and I wanted that assistant to just take care of the building concerns, the heat, the maintenance, making mm-hmm. sure that the bathrooms were clean. I had 720 students. The system was not able to respond and give me an assistant. And you have to have faith. You have to be able to hold your teachers up. The teachers there at that school were wonderful, and they did a yeoman's job. But in order to keep that going, I needed to really begin to focus in on instruction, and I took a stand. I asked the system to give me an administrative assistant, and or I wouldn't be back. The answer was no. So since I made that stand, as painful as it was, I had to stand by it.
Were you expecting that no for an answer?
I was expecting a yes, because I thought in the 3 years that we were there together, the children did make some, not a lot, academic progress. The parents in the community were involved. The churches gave us a lot of support. And I felt that we could have done so much more if I had just been able to get someone to take care of that building. I didn't mind washing windows, but I wasn't going to do them every day at the expense of the children's academic achievements. And then I expected a yes. And then I thought, well, maybe the parents will all rally, or maybe the teachers will all rally, and they'll have this great big rally, we want her back. And that didn't materialize. And so I had to stick by my conviction on what I said, that I wouldn't be able to go back unless I had an assistant.
Were you heartbroken? Did you really want to stay?
Yeah, I really wanted to stay.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us. And my guest is Deanna Burney, the former principal of an elementary school in North Philadelphia. That school is the subject of a new documentary film called I Am a Promise, the story of children growing up outside the American dream. It's a film by Alan and Susan Raymond that debuts on HBO on October 11th. We'll meet the Raymonds after this break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are Alan and Susan Raymond. Their new film, I Am a Promise, is a documentary about life in an elementary school in Philadelphia's inner city. The Raymonds are acclaimed documentary filmmakers whose other movies include An American Family, The Police Tapes, To Die for Ireland, and Elvis 56. They're joining us from the NPR Bureau in New York. Alan and Susan Raymond, welcome to
Hello.
Fresh Air.
Hi.
Why did you choose the school that we've been talking about and the school in which Deanna Burney was principal as the subject for your movie?
I've said and continue to say that I think you could make this documentary in any inner-city elementary school in any large city in the United States. I think that the difference between Stanton, however, and any school is the fact that Deanna was the principal when we, you know, went to survey it, and she seemed to have a kind of grasp of what we were after, almost an intuitive grasp, and allowed us the access that we really needed, because we don't work in a formal way. Our filmmaking technique is what's referred to as cinema verite, which basically is the belief in filming things kind of as they're happening spontaneously, rather than formally conducting interviews and just shooting kind of, you know, cutaways. I mean, we like to spend time in a location and allow the story to kind of unfold naturally.
What are your ground rules when you're shooting somebody in your cinema verite style? What do you tell them about what's on the record and what's off the record? Do you give them the right to say, please turn off the camera now, this is a very private moment that I don't want to share with viewers of this movie?
No.
Well, Alan says no under no condition, and I say, oh, yes, and therefore we talk about it and see what the situation is. We never had that with Deanna Burney. I mean, you would think that perhaps the situation where Jacquina is angry with her son, she would have turned to us, but she didn't. And I'm always amazed at how things unfold sometimes myself. But if they have a problem, they obviously have the right to speak to us and ask us to stop, and then we discuss
it. Yeah, I mean, I don't think you want to bully people into being the subjects of your documentaries or force them to appear in sequences that are otherwise scenes that they would prefer not to appear in.
You worked on one of the most controversial documentaries, The Loud Family. It's called An American Family. It was a series of 12-hour-long programs that were shown on public television documenting the lives of one family over, I believe it was, a 7-month period. And the family went through a lot of turbulence through that period. The wife in the family, Pat Loud, asked for a divorce on camera. Were there lessons that you learned from that movie about how far you were comfortable going?
Well, the lesson I learned that I kept with me my film career was that when you make a film about a person, an individual, not a police chief, not an institution, not the Army or the Bureau of Prisons, but when you make a film about an individual, you put it on television, you are really going to affect their lives very deeply. And you have, and I'm only speaking for myself, I'm not speaking for Alan. I feel you have a responsibility to take care of them during the next stage of the experience, which is when the press sees the film, when the press makes critiques and things like that. Because I felt that at that time, Channel 13 or NET just threw the Louds out on the ice. And they were totally criticized and torn apart by the media, and I felt that they could have had a little more support at that time. That way about the children of the school and Deanna mm-hmm. Burney and the parents in this neighborhood, that they might be reading television critics' remarks about their neighborhood that's going to be unpleasant, and that they just have to judge the work on what is in the 90 minutes.
Let me ask you about your film, The Police Tapes, and this was shot, I believe, in 1976 at a police precinct in the South Bronx, and it's said to be the inspiration for Hill Street Blues. What's the connection between the two?
Stephen Bochco saw our film and decided to model it for his next, you know, television series, and at that point his career wasn't very established, and he literally took many scenes. He copied the photography. He copied the character, the sergeant that talks at roll call, be careful out on the streets.
Yeah, your movie opens with the roll call, just like Hill Street Blues.
No, our movie, his Hill Street Blues opens like Police Tapes.
That's what I mean.
Yeah,
right.
And he took many characters from our film.
He said this publicly in interviews in books and Rolling Stone, American Film, et cetera. I mean, this is not something that we're guessing. I mean, he's admitted that he saw our film and said, if I could make a TV series that had that immediacy and that raw reality and, you know, using handheld camera and kind of, you know, jittery sort of scenes that would convey the, you know, the intimacy and the reality of the streets, that I would be happy. And I guess he had a good film, we had a good film, what can I say? But often documentaries do influence dramatic filmmaking. I mean, this is not something new. I mean, this has happened quite a bit.
But it also influenced journalism, because that was the mid-70s, and that was coming off of the 60s, and the cops or the police and journalists didn't speak because it was the old legacy of calling them pigs and things like that. And we did the point of view from the backseat of the squad car, and from that time on, you will see, if you actually chronicle it, more news footage of policemen's activities that's similar to ours, because the police were liked our film, and then they started to open up and trust other journalists. And I think now that you have these programs like 911 and Cops, it's all part of...
I also might say I think these films have now gone too far in the direction of giving the police a voice. I think that the point of view in Cops, to me, is a very questionable one. I think that it venerates police. It usually shows their activities with a kind of heroic portrait. And I actually think that these shows actually are a far cry from Police Tapes. I think Police Tapes was a much more objective show that really explored the darker side of policing than these shows do, although these shows are kind of derivative from, you know, what we originally did. But I don't like to compare them. I think ours is a more serious work of journalism than these shows are.
Were there any scenes either in the Police Tapes or in other documentaries that you shot where you had to choose between your safety and getting the scene that you wanted?
No, we're totally foolish. I remember in Police Tapes, you had mentioned there was a scene of them knocking the door down. There was a man holding his mother hostage, and the SWAT team had come to, knock the door down, and the irony was that they couldn't get it down.
Yeah, I had mentioned the scene to you before the interview started. I liked it so much because they have this battering ram, and they're trying to knock down the door, and, you know, after they go at it for a couple of minutes, they're all out of breath, they have to pause a little bit, then start all over again,
right.
And it's not exactly some cop coming in and kicking in the door like we always see on TV. Anyways, you were saying.
Well, it brought back the memory of making that at that moment, because we had arrived on the scene, we were the first news crew on the scene because the cops had given us the tip, so we got behind the lines before anybody else, and Alan kept saying, "You got to get in there. You got to get that sound." And I kept, inching my way forward. And then all of a sudden, I stood there and realized I was in the front line. That I was standing next to guys in flak jackets with semi-automatic rifles that were cocked, and that if the door opened, I was going to be the first one that was going to get hit. Now, what was I doing there just to get good sound? You know, unfortunately, it turned out otherwise. But I had a moment there when I realized, what was I doing here?
Susan and Alan Raymond speaking with Terry Gross. The Raymonds' new documentary about Deanna Burney and the Stanton School, I Am a Promise, will be shown on HBO throughout October. It debuts on Monday. This is Fresh Air.